Trigger warning for today's episode. It deals with themes of domestic violence. If you're in the U.S. and are having issues with domestic violence, you can call 800-799-7233 for support. You can also visit www.thehotline.org or text START to 88788. For our friends in other countries, you can visit Wikipedia and search for list of domestic hotlines. You can go to en.wikipedia.org/wiki/list of domestic violence hotlines with an underscore under each of those words to find a list of numbers and websites in a number of different countries. Welcome to Stargazing, a Stargate gazing podcast. I'm your host, Mary.
And I'm your other host, Kathy.
And each week we review an episode of Stargate alternating between SG-1 and Atlantis. Hello.
Hello. How's it going?
Fine. How are you?
I'm okay. Sorry for the slight delay. Gibby was demanding butt pats in the kitchen.
That's definitely so more important than recording.
I had to do that for her for a minute. She's so weird.
Fair.
Weirdest cat. That's not true. There are lots of weird cats. Cats are all weird in their own special ways.
Very true. Very, very true. What's new?
What is new? I feel like I had things to tell you, but now I can't remember what they are. So that's very helpful.
Yes,
useful.
Very.
Useful. Oh, I did fall. So I was telling you I fell down some tangents when I was watching this. And one of them really has nothing to do with the episode at all.
Fantastic.
But something in the episode reminded me of VCR Clue. So then I looked up the video on YouTube because I hadn't seen it in a long time. For those of you who don't know, in the 80s, Clue had a VCR version, which included this little movie that you watch for clues. It's a ridiculous game. I love it so much.
It was a fun game. Yeah. I remember playing it a few times.
And we can still play it.
Yes.
But then I found in the comments there was actually like a documentary that was put together, which was basically like an oral history of the making of the actual game, which was really cool. Huh. So I watched that. That was like 40 minutes long. I did save it till just after the episode, watching the episode, so I didn't do it in the middle of the episode.
Fair.
But yeah, so that was one of the tangents, which really has nothing to do with it, which is why I'm bringing it up now. But it was fun. And excellent. I do recommend VCR Clue. And if you have an affinity for it, I do recommend looking up the documentary as
fabulous.
Well. On YouTube. Good times. What's new with you?
Not much. Ran a half marathon yesterday. It was about 40 degrees and pouring rain. Sometimes sleeting, sometimes slushing. It was not pleasant.
It was so cold and rainy yesterday.
Also very windy.
Yes.
But aside from that, I mean, I finished. So that's what
congratulations.
Thanks. It was not pleasant.
No, no.
That's all I've been up to.
What a terrible day to run a half marathon.
It really was. Yep. It's probably the worst one that I have run as far as weather goes.
Is it worse than any of the fulls or what's your worst race ever?
Worst races would be tied Falmouth Marathon, which was the same weather as the half marathon yesterday, but a full marathon instead of just a half. And then the other one that required me to actually take 6 months off from running and then still took me several years to feel like I was starting to recover from was the Ridgefield full marathon. It was 13 degrees and incredibly hilly.
Oh, was that the Roxbury one?
Roxbury, yeah. Roxbury, that's what it was.
Yeah.
Roxbury, ugh. Ridgefield, they're like right next to each other, I think. But yeah, that one was so cold. And like I said, I had to stop running for like 6 months after that because I had wrecked my lungs so bad. And I'm still way slower than I used to be. And I blame that race. So those were my two worst ones ever.
Ugh, yeah. Those sound pretty terrible.
Yeah. Mount Washington this past year, also not great. It was also about 40 and raining at the top, but it wasn't pouring rain like it was yesterday.
Ugh.
So it wasn't, I would still say, not quite as bad as yesterday was.
Do you try to wear protective rain gear?
I attempt to.
Okay.
It can only do so much. But yes, I was wearing a raincoat, a running raincoat.
I will wear long sleeves, but I feel, for me, the amount I sweat underneath it equals whatever it's raining usually. So I'm like, fair. I'll just not wear a jacket.
If it's warm, I won't bother. But when it's 40, then yes, I will be wearing long sleeves.
Fair.
For sure.
Yeah.
And trying to keep myself somewhat dry, even though that wasn't really happening. I did think around the halfway mark that I might have to stop just because I couldn't feel my toes anymore.
That's not great.
So I was like, maybe I need to take a DNF to avoid losing my feet. But I was able to pick up the pace and warm up at least a little bit until the last couple miles. And then I started getting cold again. But I'm like, I'm 2 miles from the end. It doesn't matter that I can't feel my feet at this point. It's going to take me like 20 to 30 minutes tops to finish. I'm just going to keep going.
Way to persevere and keep all of your extremities.
Yes, I did keep all of my extremities. They're a little sore and unhappy today, fingers and toes, but they're still present on my body.
Good. Yeah, there was a cold, rainy, like 20K I did in February that was similar-ish conditions, although I don't think it was as windy. But that one I actually ended up walking most of because one of the people I knew in the race was injured, so I just stayed with her because she's like, oh no, go on. I'm like, are you kidding me?
That's very kind of you.
I don't like to leave people behind. I like it when other people leave me behind, but I feel terrible doing something like that, especially if you're injured. You're like, you don't know what's gonna happen.
Why was she even in a race if she was injured, though? Like, you shouldn't be in a race like that. You shouldn't be in a race at all if you're injured that badly.
You know the type of psychos that
do
the type of running that I was doing a few years ago.
True. Very true. But yeah, if you're really injured, don't run
through your injuries.
Especially not a 20K. Yeah.
It's not worth it. No, I'm not that person. I was always like, oh, if I'm hurt, I'm just going to stop. I don't care. But yeah, don't do it. Don't do it.
Yeah. But also don't give yourself hypothermia because you want to keep someone company that decided to run a race when they shouldn't have.
We made it back okay, and we didn't die. And then we got yelled at by the janitor of the school where the race was because we were clearly the last people there and like being wet and dirty in the bathroom when he clearly didn't want to be there at all. And we're like, dude, we can't help it. But anyway.
Sucks for that guy, though.
Yeah. I'm sorry, man. I'm really sorry that we were the last ones, the holdouts, keeping you there. But it was so gross.
Yeah. Surely so. I kept my grossness to the car in the backseat specifically. I got in the backseat because I didn't want to get in the driver's side. And get the driver's side all wet. And the car windows fogged up immediately. So I was like, fuck it. I'm just changing into my dry clothes here. Why even bother finding a bathroom when nobody can see in this fogged up car anyway?
That's fair.
And I didn't want to go back out in the rain and the cold to try to find an actual bathroom because all that I knew about were the porta potties nearby. I'm like, I'm not changing in a porta potty because I'll drop something in the grossness if I try to do that.
There isn't room in a porta potty really to maneuver for changing.
Also, there really isn't. I could have moved my car out to the far end of the parking lot, but there weren't really any people anyway, because I was also like pretty far towards the back and most people had finished. Although the marathoners were coming in when I was finishing.
True.
So that's always a blow to the ego when you have a marathoner finishing literally right in front of you and you're finishing a half marathon as the marathoner is finishing the full marathon. I'm like, God damn it. But it was fine. It's fine. Everything's fine.
Yeah, everything's fine. Yeah.
There's no running in this episode. Oh, there is some running in this episode today.
There are a lot of people in the background, too, like just doing various jogging and yoga. Yeah. And so speaking of physical fitness.
Yeah, there's some physical activity, fitness activities in this episode. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And Teal'c, too.
Yeah.
Doing his
their training montage that eventually happens. So what are we talking about today?
This is Stargate SG-1 Season 8, Episode 7, Affinity.
Ooh.
Yeah. Affinity.
We are somewhere in Colorado, presumably Colorado Springs or nearby, maybe a suburb of it. I don't know what Colorado Spring looks like.
Vancouver, Colorado.
Vancouver, Colorado. Yes. There's people out and about and cars driving, and then there is a car accident. The people driving the cars involved get out and start yelling at each other over whose fault it was.
I liked that the back car was small but filled with such hulking men.
Right? Yes. There were several large men versus the car in front that had just one smallish guy in it.
I just wasn't expecting so many big guys to pop out of that little car.
No, it was like a little clown car, basically. Of course, the large hulking men start trying to beat up the little guy that was driving the front car, but as they're just about to throw a punch, somebody catches that punch, and that somebody is Teal'c. He was dressed in a very 70s-style shirt, which I thought was strange.
And his whole outfit is white pants and his white shoes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I actually thought for a minute that this was, like, some sort of dream sequence, because...
I did, too, because he wasn't wearing a hat. Is this the end of our Teal'c hat watch, though?
I don't know.
Because it wasn't a dream sequence. It turns out he's going around hatless more
often. It's true, although he did wear a hat for a little bit in this, but it wasn't even completely covering the tattoo.
It wasn't. I know. I'm kind of sad. I think the era of the Teal'c hat watch might be over.
That's terrible.
I guess we'll see what happens in future episodes. But for much of this one, he was out and about in public without a hat.
Free flying that Apophis symbol.
Anyway, he very calmly tells the first bully, whose hand he just caught, that his behavior is unlawful.
This is unlawful behavior.
Of course, it escalates from there, where all of the bullies from the small car try to attack Teal'c. He very easily takes all of them out. So it's just surrounded by a bunch of unconscious guys on the ground. And then he looks oddly happy as he tells the driver, I believe it will be necessary to notify the police. I don't really know why he was smiling when he said that. It seemed a little bit psychotic. That was the end of the scene.
It really lent it to the, this is like some sort of weird dream sequence or like fake situation or...
Yeah, I really did not expect it to be an actual thing until the next scene after the credits. I really was pretty convinced it was just a dream sequence. But then I was like, I'm pretty sure I remember this being real, but it can't be real.
Yeah, it was a little bananas. And I think my favorite part of their fight was when Teal'c puts his head down, the guy punches him in the head, and that injures him.
Yeah. because the guy punched him like right in his metal tattoo.
It's really funny.
So Teal'c is using his tattoo as a shield / weapon.
There's also a number of bystanders just watching this happen, which was also making it seem fake and also kind of amazing at the same time.
Yeah, there was a huge crowd around him and like kids in awe and like hero worship type of awe, not like in awe of the violence that they're witnessing.
Well, what are you waiting for?
I don't know. Something amazing, I guess.
Yes.
which seemed a little bit excessive.
Yes. Just a bit.
Yeah. But that's it. Then there's credits.
There are credits. After credits, we are back in the SGC. Well, for the first time in this episode, but just in general, we're back in the SGC.
Yeah.
Jack is in his office doing some work. Walter pops his head in and he has this like grimacing smile on his face. Like, oh God, I don't want to do this, because he's still apparently doing the admin assistant position in Jack's department.
Yeah. Well, now that the guy that was only there to actually watch Jack rather than actually do that job.
Yeah.
Has left. Poor Walter seems to be stuck with it again.
And he's also, unfortunately, telling Jack that someone's here that Jack wasn't expecting and had been actively dodging on the phone, which is Colonel Kendrick from the Office of Special Investigations. He is there to talk about Teal'c. Because while they've allowed Teal'c to live off base, they meant for Teal'c to have a very low profile and beating up street thugs... They're not street thugs. Car thugs? Beating up dudes who get into traffic crashes.
In front of a crowd.
In front of a crowd is not really low profile.
No.
And kind of dangerous for the people of Earth.
Yes.
He basically wants Teal'c reined in and or brought back on base. I'm sure he'd be much happier if Teal'c was on base. Jack's like... He saved the Earth so many times. Let's let him have fun. Let's let him have a life. And this guy's like, well, we totally appreciate what Teal'c's done, but still, it's not great. There's national security issues. Jack calls him dramatic. and is not taking this man seriously at all, even when at the end he's like, you take actions to make sure Teal'c's under control, or we will. And then he leaves. That's about it.
It is. But important to this scene, I finally got a good enough look at Pwalter's name tag to see that it does, in fact, say Harriman on it. Now, finally.
He is Pwalter Harriman.
He is. Even though my transcript here still calls him Davis. But confirmed, they called him Harriman in the last episode, and his name tag does now say Harriman, even though before it did say Davis. Not all that long ago, even.
Woo!
Huzzah! Yeah. Yeah. Then we are in Teal'c's apartment. There's a knock on the door.
There's somebody at the door. There's somebody at the door. There's somebody at the door.
It is Daniel Jackson. He came in to check on Teal'c, just to have a friendly little chat. So he says, initially, anyway. Daniel comes in and takes a look around, and Teal'c is very pleased with how his apartment is coming along. He says there's been many programs on television that offer advice in their area of home design and decoration.
I'm happy.
So he's apparently delightedly been watching HGTV, which is great.
Agreed.
Apparently Daniel gave Teal'c a fern that isn't doing very well.
It's a sad, sad fern.
It is a very sad looking fern.
Daniel also said he loves the History Channel, and I was trying to, when did History Channel go totally off the rails with its programming?
Yeah, I don't think it was yet. I feel like the Blair Witch Project, whenever that came out, was kind of the start of it, because they did that documentary on the Blair Witch Project, making it seem, spoiler alert, not real, making it seem like the Blair Witch Project was actually based on a true mythological story. And then I feel like that was kind of the start, and they were doing more and more fake documentaries after that, and then it eventually all went downhill from there.
The Blair Witch Project wasn't a real thing?
It wasn't, Kathy.
I can't believe what I'm hearing.
What? I went to that movie. I saw how scared those people were. That could not have been faked with acting.
True. Apparently that movie actually came out in 1999. So yes, it did start to go downhill before.
Okay.
But I don't think it was that precipitous of a drop. I think it was a gradual switch.
But I sort of wonder if Daniel like delights in watching the Ancient Alien type documentaries and being like,
very possible.
That's actually true and I was right.
Yeah, it's entirely possible that that's why he likes it. Teal'c wants to know why Daniel is really there, because Daniel, as I said, tried to pass it off that he was just there for a visit, but Teal'c knows better. And Daniel is there because, as we found out in the last scene, Teal'c is not keeping the low profile that he is supposed to. Teal'c says it's not easy because, of course, he wants to defend people if he sees anybody in trouble. And he mentions that he often covers his tattoo in public, but when he decides not to, he just tells people that it's a tribal mark from his homeland. And Daniel's like, well, it's not about the tattoo. It's about you beating people up all the time, even though you're trying to defend other people when you do it. Teal'c says that he's just attempting to render assistance when it was needed, but Daniel says that that's kind of a problem because normal humans don't really get involved in business that is not theirs. Even though that sounds bad, that's just how it is, and Teal'c shouldn't be drawing attention to himself as he has been. And there's another knock on the door, and this time it's an attractive lady who is apparently Teal'c's neighbor. She made him some cookies. I forgot just how low the low-rise pants were of this era.
They were very low.
Were always very low, and her shirts were always very short. So
yes.
I was like, oh, the early 2000s.
The IMDb trivia for this actress says she is Christopher Judge's sister-in-law.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Just, yeah.
Also does make it a little bit weird for what happens later.
Yes. It could be a lie. I don't know. I've never fact-checked IMDb before, so.
Because, ew, the thought of hooking up or even pretending to hook up with any of my siblings-in-law is creepy.
That's why he's a professional actor and
very
you're
creepy.
Not.
Yeah. Fair. Fair. Yeah. Anyway, her name is Krista. She has been told that Teal'c came from Mozambique to study archaeology and was hired by Dr. Jackson. So she's delighted to meet Daniel because she says it's so great having him here. He's such a nice man and he takes care of all the neighbors and keeps everyone safe. It's great. But the cookies are actually a bribe because her pipes are doing that thing again, whatever that is, and she wants Teal'c to come over and help her with that.
Yes.
So Daniel makes a hasty retreat and tells Teal'c that every rule has its exceptions. So he clearly realizes that there's something going on there, some little spark between Krista and Teal'c.
Help me, Teal'c, my pipes are broken.
So Daniel leaves, and presumably Teal'c goes to help Krista with her pipe problem.
Yes. When he mentions Mozambique, that's where I fell into the clue tangent, because it's so dumb. Some of the quotes from the little movie that comes with it are about Miss Scarlet, you know, she's a spy or something, and she's talking to Colonel Mustard, and he's like, just like the time we were in Sumatra, or, and in one case, Mozambique, and she's like, I was never in Mozambique. And that sticks in my head. I don't know why. But that's why I went on that tangent.
Fair. That's a weird thing to have take up space in your head. But there's lots of weird things that take up space in my head.
So many weird things.
So many weird things.
I've also, the last few days, had Isabella Rossellini saying big beef and cheddar in my head. Because it's just such a weird thing.
Oh, damn it, Johnny. You know I love my big beef and cheddar.
That she had to say in 30 Rock. And it just lives with me.
Fair.
Oh, I love my big beef and cheddar.
Every time I talk about there being somebody at the door, all I can hear is Matt Berry from IT Crowd. Which I've used as a drop, and Jeff has also used as a drop in this podcast. And I'm sure will again.
Yeah. She also apparently starred in a different TV show with Michael Shanks.
Yeah.
Which I had not seen. I think it's a Canadian show, unsurprisingly.
Yes.
Yeah. Next, we're outside, and our favorite person is making an appearance. Sam and Pete are buying gross hot dogs from a cart.
Delicious hot dogs, but Pete is dumb. So yeah. I liked the hot dogs. I liked Sam. I didn't like the Pete aspect of the scene.
Yeah.
Cart hot dogs, delicious hot dogs.
No hot dogs
are delicious hot dogs.
No hot dogs are delicious.
I hardly ever eat them anymore because I try to eat mostly plant-based these days, but hot dogs are so yummy though.
Pete asks her about the galaxy, and Sam's like, I can't talk about that. And even though she says I can't talk about that, he takes that to mean he can continue talking about it.
Yeah, because he doesn't understand boundaries.
Yes. So I was like, shut up, Pete.
He also doesn't understand consent, but here we are.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, so he just keeps talking. He's like, oh, you travel to other planets and battle aliens, blah, blah, blah. Just shut up.
He sucks.
Yeah.
Boo this man! Boo!
I did appreciate, I guess, I don't know, I don't even appreciate it. I'm just glad he acknowledged that he stalked her.
Yeah, I did appreciate that at least.
She specifically didn't run away from him when that happened. So
yeah, I guess they've had a talk. He realizes it was wrong, at least. I guess that's
I
good.
Hope.
That he did it in the first place is still pretty disturbing, and it wasn't that long ago that he did it either. So I'm not willing to forgive and forget just yet for that.
Yeah. He is glad Sam stuck with him, and she's glad he stuck with her, even though she has this crazy-ass job. And in so much he's sticking around that he is put in for a transfer to the Colorado Springs Police Department.
Shouldn't he have discussed that with her before he actually went ahead and did it?
I would think so. Like, what? What's his plan here? Is he going to get his own apartment? Did he say anything about that? Did they talk about moving in? There's a lot that doesn't happen on camera that we don't know about their relationship.
True. But also, I thought that he had actually already done that after they'd been dating for like 2 weeks.
I think he just took a long vacation so he could stalk her.
Okay. I really could have sworn he had already done that before, but yeah, I guess maybe he did just take an extra couple weeks of vacation.
And then he pulls out a ring box with a diamond ring in it because he's surprise proposing, which is also fun.
Yeah, also not the best idea.
Definitely a thing to talk about. I don't know.
Yeah, you should have some conversations about the future of your relationship before you make huge decisions like transferring halfway across the country and just randomly proposing to somebody when you don't even live in the same town, apparently.
Yeah.
And you've apparently never discussed your future together.
It does seem a little jumping the gun here on all of this, but here we are. Impulsive Pete.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Then we're back in Teal'c's neighborhood. Teal'c and Krista are hanging out, apparently having just gone to the grocery store together because they're both carrying bags of groceries. Krista has a boyfriend, we find out, but he's not very handy, which is why she keeps asking Teal'c for help with things.
Yeah, you're more handy, Teal'c. Come help me with my pipes, please. You know just how to touch them. You have all the right tools.
I'm done. Okay.
Some lady they show putting Chekhov's handbag on the roof of her car because she's an idiot and who puts her handbag on the roof of her car, even though this is a busy downtown area and she's busy like putting her makeup on or whatever, checking a little compact while she ignores her bag. So not surprisingly, someone comes up and steals that bag. The kid runs away with the handbag. By everybody, I mean the lady whose purse it was, Krista, and the neighbor kid who clearly worships Teal'c, all stare at him like, why aren't you doing anything? How are you just going to let him get away? And Teal'c's like, well, I really shouldn't be very involved. So Teal'c obviously can't help himself, though. So he holds off for a few seconds longer before picking up a huge rock and hurling it like half a block down the road at this kid who... He hits square in the back, could have paralyzed him, we don't know. The kid falls over, and nobody goes down to check and make sure that the kid is okay, or to get the lady's bag, or to pull him out of the way of the car that's heading directly towards him. They just all stand around and compliment Teal'c on what a great shot it was instead.
I will say it wasn't a giant rock, it was an avocado that fell out of Krista's bag.
Oh, was it? Okay. Yeah. I really thought it was a giant rock. That makes this scene a little less disturbing.
Mostly because the thief, when he's running away, knocks into her and she drops her shopping bag.
He did.
So I was trying to see what spilled out. And it was avocados and oranges, and it looked like maybe a bottle of like lemon juice or something.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah. So
does make it a little bit less disturbing then. But then if it was a ripe avocado, I don't see how it could have knocked the kid down from half a block away.
The run by fruiting.
There are so many concerns about this scene.
Yeah. Anyway, as they're going back and forth, we can see the kid over Krista's shoulder. And even though there had been a car heading right towards him when he fell, it's gone in a second. So I don't know where that car went. The kid is still there laying on the ground in the background as they're chatting. But like I said, the car that had been there is magically gone in the next scene or in the next shot. So that was weird.
I think that there's so much weird crime happening in this town that while they're praising Teal'c, another person goes up to the unconscious kid and steals the purse from him and runs off, and they don't get it back.
That's, I think, a good headcanon a safe bet, given what this neighborhood seems to be like. So yes, I agree.
So much
but
crime.
They're all too busy. Gotta give the man his props.
Yeah.
So yeah. The scene ends with a change in perspective that makes it obvious that there's somebody watching what Teal'c is doing from somewhere not too far in the distance and taking photos of what he is doing. And Teal'c does seem a little bit uncomfortable with all of the praise and attention he is currently getting, given the fact that he has now been told multiple times by numerous people that he needs to keep a lower profile than he has been.
All he did was throw an avocado. I mean, come on.
Yeah. It's not like he threw a rock or something.
Right. And they were begging him, practically.
They were.
Later that night, or maybe a different day, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
We're
Who
back
knows?
In Teal'c's apartment, where he has set out his many, many candles that he owns.
Yeah, not quite as many as when he was in the SGC, or maybe they're just more spread out in a larger space.
That could be, too. Yeah. But he's gonna candle, but then it's interrupted, his candle time. Is ruined by the sounds of an argument, or at least a guy screaming to Krista to let him in. Teal'c pops his head out to see what's going on and heads on over, where Krista is trying to tell this dude to go away. He's drunk and she has to work tomorrow, and he is insisting she let him in. Teal'c intervenes and the guy's like, "This is a private conversation." And Teal'c rightly points out that it's not private when it takes place in a hallway and you're yelling.
That's a fair point, Teal'c.
I also like this random neighbor that pops her head out.
Peek-a-boo.
Anytime something's going on.
Yes, always holding the cat when she does it.
Yep. She just pops her head out.
Peek-a-boo.
and then
glares
goes
at
back
everybody
in.
And yeah. closes the door.
It's probably the only interesting thing that happens to her because she probably isn't hanging around Crime Central like Teal'c does, apparently.
True. I imagine the cat is also judging everybody because that's what cats do.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You have no idea.
Yeah.
Teal'c asks Krista if she needs help, and she's like, no, I'm fine. Doug's like, who's this guy? And she's like, my neighbor Teal'c. And he's like, what kind of crazy name is that? Which is just a dumb thing to say.
Yes.
But she's like, he's from Mozambique. Teal'c tells him to leave because Krista wants him to. Doug threatens violence. The boyfriend, I forget, did I say his name is Doug? It's Doug.
Oh, I don't remember. But yes, it is Doug.
I have a relative named Doug. He's not this much of an asshole. Just saying.
Not all Dougs.
Yes, not all Dougs. Teal'c is like, you should leave before I hurt you. Which, this man is not like the big guys from the first scene. This is a very normal sized small man that Teal'c could crush.
He is much smaller than Teal'c. It seemed like a very bad idea to be picking a fight with him.
I suppose when you're drunk, sometimes these things happen.
True.
Yeah.
Fair enough. But yes, clearly this guy kind of reminded me of Coconut, who picks fights with much larger dogs, or at least attempts to, and then always loses those fights, which is why we don't go to dog parks.
But she's cute when she picks fights.
Yeah, except that she did need emergency surgery once when she tried to pick a fight with one of our former dogs, who unfortunately has since passed from cancer. This was shortly after we got her, and she got her neck bitten to the point where it almost got her jugular.
You know, it seems like she might learn a lesson, but no.
No, she continued to pick fights with that poor dog. I mean, like, I say poor dog because, yes, Zoe would defend herself when Coconut picked fights with her, and Coconut would lose every single time, but Zoe was so old.
I know.
And all she wanted to do was sleep and be lazy, and Coconut just kept obsessing over her and trying to bite her flippy floppy ears that were so floppy. And so, as much as it sucked, I don't really blame Zoe. And it did get better as we had them longer, but it sucked. And it was contentious to the end.
Yeah. Well, this Coconut decides not to start a fight this time. Should we just call him Coconut? That would be weird.
Because he's not adorable.
He is not adorable. Sweet. There is nothing adorable about Doug.
No.
He decides to leave, though. Krista apologizes for him because that's what people do, unfortunately.
Sigh.
Yeah. And she's like,
if you have to apologize for your significant other, that's generally a sign that that's not a good person to have as your significant other.
We say sorry correct, by the way.
Yeah, because she's like, well, he's not always like this, you know? He's just having a hard time. He lost his job. And Teal'c's like, but hasn't it been hard on you? And she's like, oh, no, I'm good.
Then we're in Daniel's lab. Teal'c and Daniel are having a chat. Teal'c doesn't understand Krista's behavior or why she stays with Doug when he sucks. But Daniel says that it's a common problem, because there is a gap between the experiences of men and women. And he, of course, goes on to some tangent about the differences between men and women in different cultures. He talks about the Maasai of East Africa.
His fun fact there is complete bullshit, by the way.
Is it really?
Oh, I looked. I could find no evidence of that.
Interesting. Yeah, so he says that among the Maasai, a newlywed man will be required to wear his wife's clothing for a month to gain understanding of her life, which Sam is apparently also there and says, if only it were that simple. She's clearly bummed in her own head in this scene.
Yeah.
Daniel also talks about how in ancient Persia, if a girl died a virgin, she was forced to marry somebody anyway. So basically a guy would be paid to marry her corpse, which is disturbing. And I don't know if that's true either.
I forgot to look that one up, actually, and now I'm mad at myself, but based on the completely made up fact about the Maasai, I'm gonna assume that this is also bullshit.
Yeah, I hope so. Especially if it's like, you know, what if the kid is like an infant or a toddler?
Yeah, what?
Are they still married off to somebody if they die? That would just be gross. So yes, here's hoping that this is also a fun fake fact about ancient Persia. Sam is disturbed by that.
Yes.
Not surprisingly, as she should be, because I'm also disturbed by that.
I'm repulsed.
Sam has a rant about how on TV shows, they all make it seem abnormal to be single or to not have the perfect relationship. And
Fry, this isn't TV. It's real life. Can't you tell the difference?
She makes it obvious that she's got some stuff going on, and Daniel just looks at her pointedly and is like, has things? And Sam's like, I'm fine. We're talking about Teal'c's friend, aren't we? And Daniel says, I thought we were. They ask Teal'c how the Jaffa handle their issues, and Teal'c says that they take a pledge break, and if necessary, weapons will be involved.
Also a little disturbing.
Yes, indeed.
Domestic violence. Good times.
I had assumed that both parties would have weapons, but that is even more disturbing if only one party has a weapon.
Yeah, I assume it's both, but
I mean,
yeah.
Disturbing either way, but yes. Yeah, so not no. Great. End of that scene. That weird, disturbing scene.
I just finished listening to the last one for my part. I already did Weird and Disturbing today, and then I forgot about this scene. It's fine. And by the previous one, I mean we were talking about the child death. Yeah.
Yes, the last episode of the podcast that we recorded.
Yes. And then we're outside.
Yeah.
In a park.
Yeah. With a half-assed hat watch.
Yes.
Because Teal'c's only covering half his tattoo.
Yeah. Why are you doing that, Teal'c? A half to?
Yeah.
Tat hat. I'm done. Teal'c is Tai Chiing or whatever the Jaffa equivalent is. There are other people behind him yoga-ing, and there's just a various amount of people enjoying the nice day.
It seemed weird to me how close everybody was to the sidewalk while they were doing these various exercises. And if I was one of the runners on this sidewalk, I would feel very strange running between people that were doing yoga right on the sidewalk and people that are doing a Tai Chi-like exercise right on the sidewalk or just a foot or so away. When I have seen people doing yoga or Tai Chi in the park, they've always been well away from the sidewalks.
Yeah.
So I thought this was weird.
Yeah. But it works out for Teal'c because Krista is there to stare at him and stalk him while he's Tai Chiing.
True. I mean, he did look very good in the shirt he was wearing. So.
Oh, he sure did.
It's kind of understandable she'd want to watch, but also it's creepy and not appropriate to just stand there literally watching someone while they exercise. So
she tells him she's had another fight with her stupid boyfriend and broke up with him. And she does not look happy, so Teal'c asks, are you happy with this decision? She's like, well, it was the right thing to do. And still making excuses for him, she's like, he's not a bad person. He's going through a tough time. Teal'c rightly tells her, don't feel guilty. And then she asks about his exercise. Lucknell, there we go. That's what it was. She asks to learn with him. So they start doing movements. And then we get a montage of them training in different outfits and in different places, mostly the park in his apartment. I did see the kid with the skateboard in the background watching them a bunch of times too. The one time eating ice cream. And
I thought that was hilarious, yes.
So weird.
I liked the time when he stopped with his ice cream and like tipped his ice cream at them as they were doing their exercises.
Yep. And then the last scene of this montage is them doing sexy candle Tai Chi in Teal'c's apartment. Ending with them staring at one another.
Deeply into each other's eyes.
Yep.
Yeah. It was weird. Very weird. Yep. Sometime later, Teal'c goes to Krista's door for a visit, and she seems oddly cold. She's missed her training session, apparently, and Krista says that she can't train with him anymore, and that's it. She's got to go. Bye, thanks, Teal'c. As she goes to close the door, Teal'c notices that there is a huge bruise on her wrist. She says it's nothing, but Doug is in the apartment, yelling to find out who's at the door. So, of course, Teal'c is very displeased, and when Doug comes to the door to yell at Teal'c about their affairs being none of his business, Teal'c says that if he ever injures Krista again, he will kill Doug where he stands. And, of course, the nosy neighbor is watching. As he says this, with her cat.
She is here for the drama.
Yep.
Better than the soaps.
Yeah.
In the SGC, Sam is doing some work in her office slash lab when Jack comes in to see her. He is there to say he needs that report, but it's just an excuse for him to go check on her. That's not the word I'm looking for, but I can't make it come.
I don't know what word you're looking for.
Yeah.
So I can't either. Yeah.
Well, it's like when you're doing something for a reason, but then your reason
ulterior motive?
Ulterior motive? Maybe something along those lines. Anyhow, he's not there for that. He is there to see what is going on with her. She hasn't tried to confuse him with science in a few days, so he's concerned. He is right. There's something going on. She takes out her heat ring and shows it to him. Jack's like, these normally go on your fingers. And she, it turns out, has not said yes or no yet. Jack actually closes the ring box and she flinches when he does that, which I thought was just a really interesting minor reaction. But she's been thinking about it now for 2 weeks. Because
if you have to think about it for 2 weeks, that's generally not a good sign that it's the right thing to do.
Probably. Her issue is that she's been focusing on work for so long now, and she just assumed one day life would come to her.
She seems so down, though, these last couple scenes that she's been in, that seems like a red flag to me that this isn't the right move. If you're, like, it's one thing to be pensive and to be thinking about it, but to be this seemingly bummed out and stressed about somebody proposing to you is not a good sign.
Yeah, and I definitely think Pete is the wrong guy for Sam. But yes. I wonder, too, if she's, like, not only thinking about the thing she tells Jack, you know, like, oh, we do this dangerous job and nobody ever knows if we're coming back. And can we do that to the people we care about? And what do I do if I have kids? Like, do I keep can I keep doing this job? So there are a lot of legitimate concerns.
True.
But, yeah.
But as Jack points out, Pete's a cop. And so, cop wives have the same concern. And he also says that plenty of people that work at the SGC have kids. Yeah. And Sam knows that herself because, like, one of her best friends, Dr. Fraser, had Cassandra.
Yeah.
So she knows that people on the base have kids and that, yes, that's a risk. But
yeah,
it wouldn't be unheard of for someone at the base to have a kid.
For sure. So she's just, it is a lot for her to think about, plus adding in, you know, wondering if Pete is the right person to just finally pull the trigger with.
Which is why it would have been good if they had discussed this in advance before Pete requested that transfer and then proposed. But here we are.
Yes. Agreed.
All right, guys. So throughout this video, I'm going to show you 3 signs that this guy that you're dating is toxic.
She does at the end ask if things had been different and trails off, and it's just kind of like a sad moment of Jack thinking about what he's lost in the past and had, you know, if things had been different for him and his son hadn't died, he wouldn't be here at all. Or if things had been, I don't know, there could be multiple meanings.
I took it more to mean if things had been different between him and Sam.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's multiple ways to read this, I think, and it's just, but it is a very charged, meaningful, like, exchange they have at the end here.
Yeah, you could be right about him talking about Charlie, but what I thought it to mean was if he and Sam had ever actually had a relationship, he would not have taken the promotion that he just took.
Interesting.
And might have retired instead. I don't know, though.
Totally.
You could be right that it could be about Charlie.
Yeah. Can't believe I forgot to look up Persia.
How could you?
I know, and I was trying to see now, but I like a very quick Google search of marrying virgin brides in Persia doesn't come up with a lot.
Not surprising.
Marrying virgin corpses in
I don't even know if this is legal. Can I even Google this?
Anyway,
we're back in Teal'c's apartment building. Krista is hanging out in the hall, sitting on the floor, waiting for Teal'c. When Teal'c gets there from wherever he was, probably the SGC. He asks her if something has happened. She's clearly upset and has been crying. She says that she's fine, but that it's over with Doug for real this time. She's sorry about what's happened with him in the past, and she needs to get out of there. She can't even think in this place and asks if Teal'c will go with her. He starts to say something about maybe going somewhere tomorrow, and she says, nope, tonight. We'll just get in the car and drive. Apparently just for the weekend. I at first thought she was asking him to permanently run away with her, but she then does clarify that they'll take the whole weekend. It doesn't matter where they go. And that's the scene.
Yeah.
In Daniel's lab, Sam comes in and tells Daniel that Jack just got off the phone with Colonel Kendrick, Krista's boyfriend, has been found dead in her apartment. So that's not great.
No.
They don't have all the details yet, but they suspect Teal'c because Teal'c and Krista are both missing. So they figure that Teal'c probably murdered Doug and then also kidnapped Krista. And by they, I mean Colonel Kendrick and his people. The SG-1 team obviously does not suspect that.
That seems like a big leap there.
But, yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, it does seem bad. Teal'c and Krista are driving away. Is this Teal'c's car? Does Teal'c have a driver's license?
We've seen him driving before. He says that Daniel taught him to drive, but I right. was also wondering, does he have a driver's license? He must have an ID of some sort.
They had to have, like, given him a social security number and stuff for him to be able to get an apartment and
right.
all of that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So he's got to have some sort of a base ID for the SGC, and they've probably given him some sort of credentials so that yeah. he could get a driver's license.
Yeah.
And an apartment.
Yeah. There was a song playing in the background, and this is where I fell off too, because I was like, I can't hear what this song is. I could catch some of the lyrics, like Breaking Mama's Heart, and then Dance, 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 and then there was something else. So I Shazammed it as best I could with people talking. But it came up with a group or a person called the Dave Robin Band that seems to have had one album, but I can't find this song on the internet.
Weird.
Like, there's no YouTube of it. There's no lyrics page about it. So I don't know where Shazam got it. The song called Breaking Mama's Heart does seem to appear on the album, but I wasn't going to purchase a physical CD and have it sent to me just to confirm if it was the same song.
Don't blame you.
But that was kind of weird.
I didn't even notice the song. That is weird.
So with this song very playing weird. In the background, Teal'c and Krista are talking as they drive. He wants to know where she wants to go, but she's just like, keep driving. Teal'c notices, though, that they are being followed. And they don't know who's following. Teal'c says perhaps Doug, but Krista's like, no. He doesn't know I'm gone yet.
Uh-huh. Also, I killed him.
Oops. Yeah. Oops. Spoiler. God.
I mean, I think it's kind of obvious, though.
Yeah. Teal'c assumes they are probably following him. I can't really tell her why. But she does want to know, can he lose them? And he thinks he can, but it will require him to violate posted speed limits and several safe driving regulations. She's cool with it, so Teal'c zooms on to wherever they decide to go.
Speed. I am speed.
Which is apparently a sketchy motel. Krista asked if he learned to drive that way back in his village, but Teal'c says that there are aspects of his life that he can't divulge. She asks if he's a spy. He doesn't really say anything too specific, and then they start making out. Somewhere near Sam's house? In Sam's car? I guess? Yeah.
Sure.
Pete comes in. And Sam thanks him for meeting her. She doesn't have an answer for him yet. Instead, she wants his help to investigate Doug's murder. Back in the motel room, Teal'c wakes up and is surprised to see that Krista is not there on the other side of the bed. And then the police come knocking on the door and take him into custody.
He was shirtless, full shirtless in this, by the way.
Indeed.
Just in case everyone needed to see not only his guns, but his whole upper body. Very
and lack of pouch.
Yeah, no pouch anymore. That's right.
No residual even.
No. You would think maybe a scar, but
yeah, you would think, know. But nope.
All right.
Well, maybe the Tritonin stuff got rid of any scars too.
Maybe. That's magic, that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
In the SGC, Kendrick is still pestering Jack. Jack has put Teal'c in his old quarters. I guess they just drove him back to the SGC because they don't know what else to do with him.
Yeah.
Kendrick is concerned that he's not even under guard, and Jack's like, it's Teal'c, he's not going anywhere. And he said he didn't do it, so it's fine. Kendrick is like, too bad, you're not in charge of the investigation, I am. Ha 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 ha. Jack tells him that Teal'c said he was being followed as well, and Kendrick insists that it's not his people following him. They got a tip, he said, for Teal'c's whereabouts, and Jack's like, that doesn't seem weird to you. Seems weird to me. Yeah. Then Kendrick insists that Jack put a guard on Teal'c, or he's going to have him transferred somewhere else, which again begs why he just brought him to the SGC.
Right. It's weird.
Yeah, weird.
Yeah. I wonder if Jack's orders to the people who are guarding him are like, can you, you know, guard Teal'c? You know, just hang out there and make it look good. I'll give you some jello.
Just be present and we'll call it guarding.
Yeah.
It'll be the green jello. The best kind of jello.
Yes.
In Daniel's lab, he's hanging out and some stuff comes up on his computer that is surprising. It is some ancient symbols and a box, like a weird pop-up kind of box that in English says, look familiar? And then Daniel's phone rings. The caller's voice is distorted, which I thought was weird, because why are you bothering to disguise your voice here but then meet with him in person in the next scene? But whatever. The caller asks if Daniel recognizes the symbols, which of course he does, because he can speak so many languages.
I am fluent in over 6 million forms of communication.
The caller says that they need what is on the screen translated into Gua'uld. It's an ancient dialect, but it's obscure, and they're not able to translate it themselves. The caller also mentions that Teal'c is in trouble, and they know Daniel is the only man on Earth that can translate from an obscure dialect of ancient into Gua'uld for them. Daniel asks how they know all that, and the caller does not say. He just says that they have been watching Teal'c, so that's how they know he's in trouble, but doesn't say how they know anything about the whole languages side of thing. Daniel asks if they witnessed the murder, and the caller says they have it all on tape. Evidence Ooh. That proves that Teal'c is innocent, and Daniel can have it if he does the translation that they want. And then the call ends.
Next, we are with Pete and Sam, who are at Krista's apartment, having a look at the crime scene. Pete's got a photo of Doug's body, and we can see on the floor there's tape showing the outline of where Doug was in the apartment. The initial investigator said that Doug was pinned against the wall and choked and then fell to the floor. But Pete doesn't think that's right, because looking at the photo, and after he said that, I was like, oh yeah, duh. This guy clearly didn't crumble to the floor with his knees bent, but is like laid out.
Yeah.
With no bends at all. It just seemed kind of weird.
Indeed.
So good job, cop Pete. It seems like the body maybe was dragged. To move the body towards the wall and make it look like they were choked against the wall means that somebody bigger and stronger killed him versus some other person, Krista. Pete says, you said that Teal'c thought he was being followed, and I thought, was it you, Pete? Were you following him? You're good at that.
We all know he's good at stalking people.
Pete goes to the window and looks out to see where, if he were the stalker, which again, he's had a lot of experience with, Indeed. Where would he be doing that stalking from? And he sees across the way another set of apartments and he's like, that's the one I would be in.
I mean, we know that he is a cop and has probably done many stakeouts as part of his job, but how many ex-girlfriends do we think he's also stalked? I'm guessing all of them.
Probably. And Sam's the only one who's ever forgiven him.
Yeah, or caught him.
Yeah, that's true too.
Caught him and forgiven him, who knows? It is a little bit later. They go into the empty apartment across the street. I was wondering if they bothered to get a search warrant.
I don't think they did, because I think I saw Sam putting away her lockpicking kit.
Okay, I missed that part.
I specifically was looking for it, because I was like, she knows what she's doing. I wonder if she got to.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I still don't know if she did, because I think Pete comes in first, but maybe they both know how to pick locks.
Yeah, but I thought that that was not great then, because any evidence that they find isn't going to be helpful now if you don't actually have a warrant and get the information or whatever legally by searching this apartment. So yeah, so they let themselves in. They shout hello. There's nobody there. There's also no furniture or anything. And after taking a little look around, they see three indentations on the floor by the window that would seem to indicate a tripod of some sort for a camera or a telescope, or maybe both, who knows. Probably a camera
pet.
With a telephoto lens. Sam thinks it's a dead end, but Pete says not necessarily, and they're going to check out some pizza places nearby, because you never eat healthy on a stakeout, and so maybe there's somebody that was suddenly ordering a bunch of food from this apartment.
Sam looked so skeptical.
She did. Indeed.
Yeah. Elsewhere, Daniel has gone to meet the sketchy people on the phone. There's some dude who's got a coffee cup. They're walking and talking. He's like, I'm impressed that you came alone. I like a man who can follow instructions.
Is he hitting on Daniel?
Maybe. In my head, everyone's hitting on everyone all the time.
I like it, yeah. It's a good headcanon to have, I think. I appreciate it.
Daniel tells him that he needs more time with the translation because he doesn't have any context, and without context for what he's trying to translate, he can't do it. And the guy's like, yeah, no, I know you can do it. Why are you lying to me? And we're going to have to do this the hard way. So you're going to have to come with me. And Daniel's like, I don't need to go anywhere. And then the guy's like, let me put down my coffee cup and have a sniper shoot through it for you to prove that I will kill you. So maybe get in my car. And then Daniel's like, yes, okay, I will get in your car.
The angle that the sniper shot through the coffee cup, that bullet should have then hit the guy that put the coffee cup down, but it didn't.
Huh. Maybe he had a gold shield or something.
Yeah, maybe.
That we didn't know, see.
Yeah. Could be.
Yeah. I did appreciate the shot through and the coffee was actually hot. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Sometimes I see people in shows carrying around, you know, coffee cups, and half the time it seems like they're just empty anyway. But yeah. Then to even make it a hot coffee that gets shot, it was a nice touch.
Yeah. Yeah. Sam is in Tilk's quarters giving him an update on what she and Pete have been working on. She says that a couple pizza places have repeated a white guy who has been there half a dozen times in the last 2 weeks. That doesn't seem very suspicious to me because Americans have terrible diets, and I would think that there are probably plenty of people who go to the same pizza place several times a week.
Also, pizza's great, okay?
Because, yes, pizza is amazing and delicious, and I eat pizza probably several times a week, but usually it's frozen pizza.
Maybe he had a salad.
Pizza could be a salad. I had salad from a pizza place last night and then also for breakfast.
There's a place in New Haven which makes fantastic salads along Yum. With their fantastic pizza, and you know it. And we've been Yum. Talking about needing to go back there.
Yum. Is it bar? It's bar. Bar is great.
Yep.
Love yeah. bar.
So yeah, good.
They have awesome pizza. I've never had their salad.
Their salads are really good too.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do need to go there. Yeah. Love that place.
Pizza, pizza party. Pizza, pizza party.
Tilk asks if it is unusual for the same person to go to a pizza place half a dozen times in the last 2 weeks. And again, not really. Sam confirms, not necessarily. But they did get a license plate from those interactions, and they are going to check out that license plate. Jack comes in and says that Kendrick is finally convinced that something else is going on other than Tilk murdering somebody, because now Daniel is missing, and Tilk obviously had nothing to do with that.
What? He didn't just disappear Daniel, too, from his cell? Well,
especially, yeah, I was going to say, especially since he's been locked up this whole time?
Yep, no. Yep. Daniel is in a van, handcuffed, with a couple other guys sitting around in the back with him. He's like, oh, you guys are XNID, right? Huh? Call yourselves Trust now? A Trust? They don't answer specifically, but they do say they want the same things that Daniel wants, trying to protect the planet. It's always their line, the NID, Indeed. And all of the former NID, and blah, blah, blah. So they've been stalking Tilk, Daniel concludes, because they want to be sure that Tilk is not a threat to security. He's an alien, of course, the guy says, and, you know, you can't trust any aliens, no matter how many times they've saved the Earth.
Nope.
You can't trust him, especially Tilk. I mean, he doesn't even have a hagfish, and how can you even trust that guy? I don't know.
Especially when he's teaching random women how to crush men's windpipes.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, because he does say here, Tilk is partly responsible for the boyfriend's death because of the things he taught Krista.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to be fair, people should know how to defend themselves, though, so I don't fault him for that.
Yes.
Having studied martial arts for many years, I think it is important that people know how to defend themselves in a bad situation.
Yes, and I am not going to shed a tear for crushing the windpipe of an abuser, so...
Right, exactly.
Self-defense, he says it was. Yep. Which, of course, they were watching, but didn't intervene.
Right. He does say that Doug was getting out of hand.
Yep.
But, yeah, of course it didn't intervene.
Yeah. And then they just use that opportunity of Krista fighting back and killing Doug to frame Teal'c.
Yeah.
Because that's what they do, because they're the NID assholes.
Yep.
Yeah. They arrive at some random warehouse. There's another guy there greeting. It's not really a greeting. They're not happy to see Daniel. He's
oh,
like,
hey.
What is going on? What is he doing here? Did you recognize the guy?
No. He looked familiar, but I didn't know why, and I didn't bother to look it up.
He was Froyo, which was Frotak.
Oh, okay.
So he's been in the show before as a different character.
Yeah, I didn't realize him without all of the Jaffa metal on his face.
Yeah.
Okay. That would be why he looks familiar. Yeah.
Yeah. This guy's mad because they just wanted the information and not to kidnap Daniel. But the other guy's like, he wasn't cooperating. What was I supposed to do? And the other guy's like, dude, you can't kidnap Daniel Jackson. What do you think is going to happen here? And he's like, but we need the translation. I think I forgot to mention, they also say they have Krista.
Oh, yes, they do.
So that is one of the reasons Daniel also was willing to cooperate with all of this, because she's there.
Yeah. Not only did they have snipers on him, but they also have Krista.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
yeah. These bad guys are very cliche bad guys. Like, they're talking in a very, very melodramatic bad guy way.
Yeah.
And the fact that they have kidnapped Krista and framed Teal'c for murder, like, it just felt like a bad mystery TV show from like a made for TV bad show from like the 80s or bad movie from the 80s or something.
We're in multiple TV shows in this one, huh? Because
yeah.
We got Teal'c 70s, like, I don't even know what the premise of a show would be other than fighting crime as a concerned citizen. I guess that could be a thing.
I mean, I guess it'd be kind of like Shaft, but Shaft was supposed to actually be a police officer though, right?
I think so. Who's the black flyer dick that's a sex machine to haul chicks? I don't know, but anyway, yeah. There's a lot of silliness going on.
Indeed,
too.
Yeah. It's a weird episode.
Yeah.
In the SGC, Sam's lab, she is working. The phone rings and it is Pete. And they've gotten some information about the license plate from the pizza place. It is a rental car and the name on the agreement is tied to a fake ID. So, of course, that is the person that they want. Pete says that whoever set up the whole thing knew what they were doing. There's a bank account, social security number, and credit cards all tied to it. But the actual guy died 6 months ago. So they're going to continue to focus on that car and try to find more information about it from the rental company, which may have satellite tracking to figure out where that car is now or has been going to. So Pete's going to go and research that. And he'll call her. Back in the warehouse, there's some person computing, establishing an uplink ready to transmit. They're going to have Daniel do his translating, and they're going to know if he does the translating wrong, which begs the question, why do they need him to translate in the first place if they're going to instantly know that he didn't do it correctly?
It's weird. Yeah. Without context, again, we know nothing either.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird. So Daniel does agree because he doesn't want them hurting Krista, who they have brought in. Outside the warehouse, a bunch of trucks pull up and a bunch of armed men jump out and take up positions at the door. Back inside the warehouse, they have confirmed that Daniel's translation was correct, but they make Daniel and Krista get against the wall anyway and face the wall. Daniel is incensed because he gave them what they wanted and they're still presumably going to kill them anyway.
Shocking.
Yeah, we get a quick view of Sam and Pete putting explosives on the door, and they are joined by all of the armed men that just jumped out of the vans outside. Krista and Daniel do get shot, but only by zat guns, so they're not dead. They're only shot once, so they pass out on the floor. The assault outside finishes getting itself ready, and they bust into the warehouse. They find Teal'c and Krista, realize that they're unconscious and not actually dead. They've got all of the exits covered, so there's no way that the people that were in there could have escaped in the short amount of time, even though this room is empty, besides Krista and Daniel.
Do you think they were beamed or ringed?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I was wondering the same thing, because there is nobody there. And Pete asks if it's normal for bad guys to just disappear into thin air after they've searched the rest of the warehouse. Not only is this room empty, but the entire thing is empty. Yeah. And Sam says, no, it's not that unusual for people to disappear into thin air. So that is a very good question, whether they were beamed or ringed or who knows, maybe even something else. And then Pete says, figures, I should be used to this by now. And Sam says, yes. And I mean, yes, meaning obviously she's saying yes to his proposal, which made me groan because, ugh. They go back and forth a couple times with Sam repeatedly saying yes and Pete saying, you're not messing with me, right? You merely mean it?
Yeah.
And then they hug and kiss.
Yeah. Maybe she just really enjoyed doing this buddy cop thing with him. And
maybe.
Was like, maybe we can do more of this.
Yeah.
But only if we're married.
Yeah. Indeed. She needs that commitment before she will buddy cop with somebody.
Yes.
More than once.
Yep. And the final scene is Teal'c packing stuff into his car.
I was so sad because he seemed so happy in his apartment and had been so happy about decorating it and making it look cool.
Yeah. And this has to be, like, he had to consent to this decision. Like, I don't think he was ordered to do this.
No. I think he agreed it was the right thing.
Yeah. Which, but it just sucks.
Yeah. Because he'd been so excited.
The rest of the SG people don't live on the base.
Right.
So it's not like, I don't know. I don't, other than the part where he keeps playing crime fighter, he's not like an extra threat to be living off base.
But I think that they figure he's still being targeted at this point.
Fair.
By the people who kidnapped Daniel. That is true. Though.
Stupid assholes. Yeah.
And without an answer on who that was or why, it's potentially dangerous for Teal'c to be interacting with anybody.
Yeah.
If they're targeting Teal'c and anyone that he associates with off base.
Yeah. Boo.
But yeah, it sucked.
So Teal'c is packing. I guess that is his car.
Yeah.
His fanboy is helping him by breaking stuff.
Yep.
While trying to get it into the car. Krista comes up to see him off.
I guess she was never detained or anything.
I guess not.
Unless they just made a ruling of self-defense and released her way faster than I would expect.
I don't actually know
how long that process would take.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't see any actual local police involved in any of this. It was all
true.
SG people. So,
and former NID, presumably former NID trust people.
Maybe they can just be like, yep, we took care of it.
Sweep it under the rug.
It's all fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chris is like, you don't have to leave. This was all my fault. I don't know who those guys were in the warehouse, and they were using me to get to you. That's all I know. And Teal'c's like, but...
That's the problem.
Yeah. But he's like, they would have done it regardless. Like, they would have maybe kidnapped this child. Who knows?
Yeah.
That kid loves Teal'c, and...
He loves Teal'c so much.
And Teal'c likes children, so he would have done anything he could to save the boy. And been in the same situation.
Yep.
She wants to know what they wanted, and Teal'c's like, I can't tell you that. He's being cagey. She's like, where are you going? He's like, from back where I came from. And therefore, I must say goodbye. The last thing from the apartment that comes out is the dead fern. Or the sad fern that maybe is dead.
Yeah, it's even more sad now than it was before.
Sad plant. I understand, Teal'c. I can't take care of plants either.
No, I have a bunch of plants and some of them are very unhappy and I don't know why, because I give them water and they have grow lamps and then some of them are still unhappy anyway.
The kid shows Teal'c that on the bottom of his skateboard he's drawn or painted on Teal'c's tattoo symbol, which Teal'c very graciously is like, I am honored, but he must have had some mixed feelings about that.
Right? I was thinking that too, right?
He's like, you don't know what you've done, buddy.
Apophis is a false god. A dead false god.
And then Teal'c and Krista have an uncomfortably long staring session before he gets in the car and drives off, where I again tried to Shazam the song that Teal'c was playing at the end in his car, which Shazam said was called Take Me Baby by Winston McFarlane, which was also a song I could find no information about on the internet.
Weird.
So take that with a grain of salt, baby.
Fair. I take most of the things you say with a grain of salt.
That is, you should. Reasonable.
Yeah.
And that's the end of the episode.
Indeed. Did you like the episode?
Mostly I did. I mean, it was a weird episode, but it was very Teal'c-centric, and it was really great to, like, watch him out and about and interacting with random people. I really enjoyed that aspect. I don't like Pete.
This guy sucks.
But I like that they're developing Sam's, like, life outside of the SGC, because she deserves that too, even if it's
Pete episodes
Pete.
In SG-1 remind me of Luoxana Troy episodes.
Oh, no.
Next Gen. In that if I was just watching this for the sake of watching it, I'd be skipping over all the episodes that Pete is in.
Yeah, I actually really liked the beginning sequence where it felt like it was like a dream or a weird ass TV show that has never been made before. I don't like domestic violence, so that wasn't the best. I don't enjoy watching things with, I mean, nobody likes domestic violence, I should say.
Yeah, I suppose I should have put a trigger warning on this one.
You still can.
I can.
But yeah, it's just so a serious topic taken somewhat seriously. Also, it was mixed in with a weird romance with Teal'c. I don't know. I don't really have any good thoughts on that. Yeah, so mostly overall, I liked it because I like a Teal'c-focused episode.
Fair.
Yeah, that was a little incoherent. What about you?
I had mixed feelings about the episode. I, of course, liked all of the Teal'c aspects of it. I liked how happy he was about his apartment while he had his apartment, and I like any episode that has more Teal'c in it rather than less Teal'c in it. But obviously the themes of domestic violence are quite a bit of a downer, and I don't like Pete, so I didn't like that aspect of it. So yeah, so there was a lot that I liked about it, a lot that I didn't like about it. So mixed. Yeah. Mixed reviews for me.
We'll have to see what the NID is up to in future episodes, I suppose.
Indeed.
Or whatever. The Trust.
Yes. Whatever it is now. But that won't be the next episode.
No.
Because we've got Atlantis next.
Atlantis? What are we talking about?
It is. Season 1, Episode 6, Poisoning the Well. Atlantis offers help to the Hoffins, whoever the hell they are, who are working on a defense against the Wraith. That is according to IMDb. Very detailed.
Very descriptive, yes.
Yeah. Over on the TVDB, the team finds a world whose people are on the brink of a discovery that may make them immune to the Wraith feeding.
Oh.
Okay.
Interesting. Hoffins. I don't remember this.
I don't really either. It sounds vaguely familiar, but I don't remember a lot about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we'll find out.
Indeed.
Intriguing.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully no one will be terrible and try to steal their technology.
Yes, hopefully not. Not like last time.
Yeah.
I guess we'll find out.
Yes. We got anything else to talk about?
I don't think so.
Okay, well then.
Thank you so much for listening to Stargazing with Kathy and Mary. This podcast is completely listener-supported, and we couldn't do it without you. Show your support by telling everyone you know about how awesome this show is. Your reviews help a lot, especially on Apple Podcasts. You can find us at stargazing.space, reach out to us via email at stargazing@gmail.com, find us on social media at stargazing on Instagram, stargazing@mastodon.world, get some merch at tinyurl.com/stargazing, and finally show your financial support by joining us over at patreon.com/stargazing. Thank you for traveling through the gate with us. We'll catch you next time on Stargazing with Kathy and Mary.
I'm Kathy.
And I'm Mary.
And you have been listening to Stargazing. The end.
The end. It was very weird.
I actually
and also.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
And also he. Helpful.
Yeah.